So members, at the honorable post will be joining us. The first call is lost like me. And honorable Kapana is going to join us as we proceed with our meeting. Honorable members, this is a continuation of the meeting that we have started on Tuesday. We had a briefing by the planning and monitoring. Today we're having a briefing from the Auditor General and the team. Auditor General, you're welcome to our meeting. It's a pleasure to have you in our midst. We are in your hands. You can take us through the presentation. There is no new member that I have to introduce to you. They are still the ones that you know. They have not changed. We have not changed members. There's a new Mr. Mapanga. It's no longer new man, it's old. Mr. Mapanga has just joined the committee. That's the only new person that probably you're not. You're welcome in your team. You can take us through your presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Just from our side as well, Mason Kau, she had an operation, so she's off sick now till mid-November. So Ngili Manzi, he's acting in her position, so that's why he's here. Desmond is my manager, you already met him. And then I've got one of my other team members, it's Londoloza. That's part of my team. So that's the introduction from our team. And I think the honourable members, I think they know me by now, because I'm also like furniture already. So yeah, okay, Chair, yes, look, we can start with the presentation. It's just on slide 3, where we've got our reputation promise, where we say our office exists to strengthen the democracy, oversight, accountability in the public sector, through auditing, and building public confidence. And then the role of the AGS in this BRRR process is just to reflect on the audit work performed by the, to assist the portfolio committee in its oversight role of assessing the performance of the entities, taking into consideration the objective of the committee to produce a BRRR. The next slide is just the three areas that we look at. It's your fair presentation of the financial statements. That's on slide 4. Reliable and credible performance information and in compliance with the key legislation and financial and performance management. That's the three areas that we look at during our audits. If we look at the next slide, we've got the unqualified opinion with no findings, where we talk about a clean audit. And they we just say they what do they do to get to a clean audit? It's credible information, reliable information that the departments give, that complies with all key legislation. Unqualified opinion with findings, they is mostly where they things are aligned, but there's material adjustments or compliance with legislation that hasn't been complied with, and then it's unqualified with findings. Page 6, it's there we talk about the qualified opinion. When do we express a qualified audit opinion? The adverse opinion, there we set it out as what we when we do an adverse opinion, and then a disclaimer of opinion. That's the worst, actually, opinion that we can express on our financial statements. If we go to slide 8, I think that's what where we should start with the department and its entities. If we look at the first block there, the 3-year trend, it shows there that there's improvement in the audit outcomes of the department over the 3 years. It starts with just one audit clean. Last year it was PPECB and MLRF. This year's NMC, OVP, PPECB, but we'll just see that MLRF regressed. The regression is a result of irregular expenditure, We will get to more detail on the slide where we discuss irregular expenditure. So for the rest of the auditees, they still have problems on financial statements, compliance, and performance information. That's why they're not clean audits. If you look at the compliance with legislation, the three-year trend is well. As with the financials, overall improvements, there's improvement by three of the auditees, and it's still DAF, ARC, MLF, Mega Farms, and compliance. On compliance, we will get to the slides, but for DAF and ARC, it's material adjustments to the financial statements. MLRF was the compliance and with irregular expenditure. Mega Farms, the compliance there is that there's no audit committee and there's no internal audit. Mega Farms, and I think it's things that's coming a long time already from Mega Farms, so I don't know how they can address that. We discussed it with the minister as well. They in looking at transferring Mega Farms to the ARC, but that's still in process, so they couldn't give us more feedback on the issue with Mega Farms. And then if you look at the last block there is the performance information, the quality of the annual performance plans. There was a huge improvement from over the 3 years. For the current year, it's only DAF in one of the programs, Program 4, where they had issues on usefulness, where there were targets that was not specific. Just to elaborate on the DAF one, previous years we selected Program 2, 3 and 5. So when they started with this, they were always qualified on usefulness, qualified on reliability. So they've addressed all those things. But with Program 4, that was the first year this year that we've selected Program 4. So, and then we picked up these issues, and it just shows that they don't look at the root causes in our recommendations, because it looks like they just fix what we show them and bring out in findings, and they don't go to all the bigger picture to see that, but here's a program, let's make sure that we address the root causes in this. And that's where that was that for DAF and that one. On reliability, we'll see now for the current year, which all clean there. So all of what we say here, if they report on a target and we, they give evidence of the numbers or whatever they to reply on, and then we just look if that evidence that they give is reliable. So we didn't pick up anything on the performance information or reliability. If we go to slide 9, there we talk just about that's the key controls. On if you go to the entities like Mega Farms, I'd already discussed that it's intervention required under audit committee in the internal audit. PBCB is a clean audit, there are no issues there. OEP, we've got problems with the ICT governance. That's still things that's in progress. Regular accurate performance reports. They've got small issues that's not coming to material, but they have to address these findings and these shortcomings, because it can go in next year's, it can be material, and then it can be regressing as well then. So they must make sure that they still keep with it daily, monthly, and controls in OVP. NMC, it's also clean this year, so there's nothing there. MLRF, the yellows there, that's as a result of the non-compliance and the irregular expenditure that occurred there. The ARC in DAF, in progress, that's also a result of the non-compliance, material adjustments to the financial statements, and irregular expenditure. On the ARC, they've got a new system in place, but they still have problems with that. That's why there were material adjustments. But taking it further, the previous years, they also had in this also material adjustments. So I think there should be intervention specific in ARC to get all these material adjustments corrected in future, because otherwise then they will never get to a space where they say they can be clean. And if you look at the previous years, it's about the same line items that were there were material adjustments. So that is on the two major things on DAF and ARC. If you look at the assurance providers per level, senior management, for NMC PPECP is a green, so we put bright assurance. Accounting authority officer is again the NMC OEP PPECP as a result of the clean audits. The executive authority provides some assurance, and that's where we meet with the minister. Then if you look at the second level, that's internal audit. All of them are green except DAF, the department, where they still had vacant positions in the internal audit division, but that position has been filled, so they're fully capacitated now. And we also look at the work that they perform to ensure on the quarterly reports that they discuss with the portfolio committee to make sure that what they do, they come to the right conclusions. And if we go to the audit committees, all of them provide assurance, except where there's no one for Negafans that we already discussed. And then on the portfolio committee, we rated it as provide assurance for us. If we go to slide 11, there's just the detail of the performance information, the programs that we've audited, and as can be seen in on reliability, there was no material findings on all of the audits, and I just want the one on DAF and usefulness. That's program 4 that I alluded to when we on the first slide. We also now in process of having again workshops with the department to see how we can they can address the program 4 issue on usefulness. On slide 14, there's more detail on the compliance and irregular expenditure. Material misstatements, as already said, that was an ARC and DAF for the year. Prevention of irregular expenditure is DAF and MLRF. MLRF was improved from to 12.5 million. The previous year was 148 million. But that is as a result of that contract that was previously that came to an end. So for this year, there was a new contract where they incurred 12.5 million. Irregular expenditure. That is out of the 13.8 million for our portfolio. So it's about 92% of the irregular expenditure lies with MLRF. Consequence management, that's the MLRF that I reported, there's no consequences taken on staff that doesn't comply. When we go to the compliance again, the middle block there, that was the compliance is uncompetitive or unfair procurement processes. That is the MLRF. A small portion there is the department, but this was only 829,000 rand on irregular expenditure. Awards to other state officials, that's the MLRF, where staff did numeral work outside of the office with no approval. That's a thing that they have to improve on their controls to ensure that all those are approved when they do it. The quality of the submitted financial statements, 2015-16, we say if it's not corrected, DAF and ARC would have been qualified, but they corrected the material misstatements. That's why for all the audits now, the outcomes are material without material misstatements. And the previous years as well, it's just the NMC and the ARC that had problems there. On that, the two issues that for the quality of the submitted financial statements is on accruals and biological assets. That's the forest where they on accruals. It's a thing that gets every year. We've got problems on accruals in the department. But previous years, the accruals was not material, so it didn't have effect on the financial statements. But this year, it was material. So they have to put process in place, specifically at year end, to make sure that they correctly disclose the accruals in the financial statements. And I think that's where the department should put additional expertise in to get this thing right on the accruals, because it's every year the same, as I said, but it's not material. On the next slide, on page 15, there's just where we, on the irregular expenditure, that, as I discussed already, the 13.48 million for the year. Last year it was 148 million. So there's an improvement, but the improvement should be, there should be no irregular expenditure. So that's the thing that all the auditees must, they must make sure that they have controls in place to prevent irregular expenditure. So that's what for that 13.48 million is the department and the MLRF and a small portion for honest support. Investigations of irregular expenditure, it's just on the MLRF at 15-16 that they haven't yet investigated that irregular expenditure. If you look at slide 17, there we've got the root causes. We just highlight the top three root causes. And that's where we say slow response by management, and that's accounting office and senior management. When we talk about slow response, is the same things that we pick up every year again comes picked up the negative following year. So that's why we say slow response. Even maybe sometimes it's not material, but it can get material over the years coming. So that's where we say slow response by management. Then we on the key root causes relate to lack of skills and competencies in the supply chain management unit and not adherence to supply chain management policy, and inadequate processes and procedures to ensure that financial statements submitted for audits are valid, accurate and complete. And this is the thing that they can actually address if they do quarterly, but it's preferable to do monthly financial statements, so that they can get into the frame of to make sure that on a monthly basis when they prepare their financial statements, they already will have accurate financials and complete financial statements on a monthly basis. Then the middle block is the status of the key commitments made by the minister. The one in the green blocks, that has been implemented. The ones in red is not implemented. What's not implemented is the plan to identify specific areas where service delivery will take place, linkage between the budget and the targets of the strategic plan, currently consulting with National Treasury on this issue, with a discussion with the DG as well. They're starting now to link this from the budget to the strategic plan and the targets. And then in progress, there's daily, weekly, and monthly checks and balances to ensure credible and completeness of financial statements and performance information. Plan to support agricultural schools and encourage youngsters to study in the agricultural field. And then collaborate with the provincial MECs to ensure proper monitoring and evaluation of DORA funds. A tasking was established to identify employees to sign to monitor cash funds. That is in progress. But they do now have, on a quarterly basis, they review the financials and the outcomes of the DORF funds. On the portfolio committee, what we recommend that the portfolio committee must look at, request management to provide feedback on the implementation and progress of the action plan during quarterly reporting. That's important because they compile an action plan. We look at the action plan to make sure the root causes and recommendations are taken up into this action plan. And we as well, on a quarterly basis, will look at this action plan and see how far they are with the action plan that they compiled. Portfolio committee must get independent assurance from internal audit and audit committee that completeness and credible information presented to portfolio committee quarterly has been verified for at least that the control systems used to produce quarterly reports are reliable and credible. And then the committee must commit to requesting that departments and entities report on their impact and include a requirement that department and entities, IPPs, must indicate the impact to be achieved by the department and entities. And I think that is this one is important because we all want to see service delivery. And if they can, in their IPPs, bring in to say, this is what we want to deliver, and this is the impact that we want to have. Mm-hmm. And if they do done that, the portfolio committee can then come and say, but yes, we go going to the right direction to say, there is a service delivery, and what we've delivered, there's an impact. People can get food or whatever the case may be on what they supposed to do as the agricultural sector. Chair, Honourable Chair, that is our presentation on the audit outcomes. From our side, I think if they can just sort out this two or three things, the department can be clean as well. The ARC also, I don't know that intervention, what further steps can be taken for them to clean up the material adjustments to the financial statements. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Any questions?
Thank you, Auditor General and the team. Honourable members, that was the presentation. We can now engage on questions and clarification on the presentation that was made by the team. Honourable Santana, Honourable Jaisa, Honourable Pulse, and Honourable Maloy. As noted, you can start, Honourable Santana.
Morning, and thank you, Honourable Chair. It's on slide 9. The yellows against the following items, effective leadership, oversight responsibility, and HR management, as well as under performance management, record keeping. They are a matter of concern. I have looked at the suggestions or suggested solutions there too in your, I think towards the end, yeah, including those of the minister. And I would agree with your recommendations. That we need to get a feedback on the implementation of those recommended correctional steps. And I would like for us as a portfolio committee to really stress the importance of having, of seeing an improvement on those specific areas. We appreciate the fact that you have red flagged them. Yeah. Now on slide 15, I would give a qualified welcome for the improvement. Indeed, it's so correct to say that we need not have any irregular expenditure. whilst we appreciate the big jump from 148 million to 13 million, still you can go a long way with a million that is correctly spent. And lastly, on slide 16, you know, yesterday I was with rural development, and I didn't find from the Auditor General's representatives there the comment that you have made that the department and its entities need to inform Parliament about the social impact of the expenditure that has come about, because the very existence of an institution called government is about bringing about social change. So it is most welcome, and I would hope that, you know, it's different from one or two other portfolio committees, ours here in agriculture would insist on that, and that the department would really come to the party and make sure that in their quarterly reports, they do report, you know, or perhaps annual report, they do indicate the socio-economic impact of every rand spent, you know, by them. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you very much, the Chairperson. I just wanted to check if they, the auditors, do engage, perhaps interact with the department and in its entities for the purpose of assisting, so that now when the submission is made, so these people now would have improved a lot. So do you assist them all the time, perhaps, or they just submit then? Then again, how can you read now the response to recommendations that you always make? If the recommendations are considered, then can you just say generally how are they considered? If you give just sort of a read. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and thank you for the presentation to the Auditor General's office. I think Honourable Pultani said something very important there. It's about the impact and the social impact, and that is not clear yet. This gives an idea of the management of the department, which I also question the fact that what criteria, firstly, are we using to determine good management, weak management? Is it something that's just subjective? Do you tick a box? Are there any criteria used? But back to the social impact, and I think, you know, I always draw a comparison to audits of the city of Cape Town, who have the best audits in the country. But the poverty is glaring. So, although this audit isn't great, it's very bad, I'm asking myself if the department had a mandate to address nutrition security, and we have to assess that impact in improving nutrition security, because as the monitoring and evaluation presentation showed us, we don't have an issue with food security. The problem is nutrition security, getting people who are starving to access nutrition. So I think that impact is not clearly indicated here as to how many households were improved, that sort of thing. And I think those are the things that we really want to know, is if we are addressing those challenges. And then, of course, every year we've got a challenge that we're going to face for the rest of our lives. We're going to have an issue of drought, and I ask myself, are we always going to obsess about the problem of drought, or are we not going to be proactive and duplicate the desalination plants and budget for it that we have in Mossel Bay, where we can produce 15 megaliters of water have massive pipelines that feed those six provinces that are drought-stricken every year. Every year, I mean, you know, Thandi Modise picks at each other because of drought in the northwest, and she was the premier there, so you must know if the premiers pigs are eating each other because there's no feed because of drought. What are we doing to address those challenges? So I'm saying if we really had, if this department had the serious challenges, or faced the serious challenges that faces agriculture, then this really poor report from the Auditor General would look a lot worse. Because there is a problem with competency within the department that says so again. Every year, I remember last year it was the same thing, competency. I mean, are we going to go year in and year out and with a department that has a problem of competencies? So I tell myself, you know, when if I were to be very subjective and say, ah, you know, this is poor competencies and we are lacking it in the department, then there's a serious leadership problem who cannot recognize, or maybe does recognize, but does not recognize the importance of actually addressing these problems with competencies. So if we were to face the serious challenges of actually addressing nutrition security, making agriculture something fashionable to homes, and it needn't be massive farms or it's just making it, getting people to take ownership of their own nutrition. And I think those are the things that we should really be focusing on, and if we did focus on those things, would this poor report have remained the same, or would it not have been a lot worse, because we're already having problems with competencies? But I think there's bigger problems there. We're just not concerned about the real challenges we face. We're just happy to obsess about the problems every year. So I need to know from the Auditor General's office is what sort of impact is being assessed by the Auditor General's office in terms of addressing challenges of nutrition security, reducing the impact that drought has on us every year. Those are the two things. Of course, the 12 million rand wasteful expenditure is a real concern, but I don't expect any different from a department under the current administration. There'd always be those sort of things. 12 million will fly soon. We've seen with SARS even 220 million given to the commissioner's son in terms of business. So it doesn't surprise me when I see a 12 million rand wasteful expenditure for any department under the current administration. I want to know, did we identify exactly who's responsible for this wasteful expenditure? Have we determined whether it's been stolen? Have we laid charges at the police? Have we brought the criminal to book? Because wasteful expenditure, to me, is actually robbing the people of this country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Pulse. Honorable Maloyi.
No, thanks, Chair. Just two things. The first one, I move from an assumption that the presentation today was to assist members of the Portfolio Committee to prepare themselves when they engage with the department, when the department presents its annual report, and that will raise many issues with the department, and the department will have to respond. And I must thank the Auditor General for raising these issues with us and for preparing us for that particular engagement. And I assume that all of us, we are now ready. The only thing which I would want the Portfolio Committee to agree with, the Auditor General raises an important thing around commitments, that we must commit ourselves. we must commit ourselves to request the department and entities to report on their impact. So this is what we must do when we engage entities, when we engage the department, that they must report on the impact. So this is what we'll do, and we commit ourselves to that, the office of the AG. The only question which I would want to raise, the AG raises a matter of that there are inadequate processes and procedure to ensure that financial statements submitted for audit are valid, accurate, and complete. Now, the question which I just want to raise, are you suggesting that the audit action plan, which must be drafted by the department immediately after your audit and so on, does not address issues of procedure? If it doesn't, I would want to hear from you, because I suppose that before they adopt that audit action plan, they interact with your office. And your office must then say to them that your audit action plan does not include certain things. Can you go back and include those? And if you are doing so, and if that audit action plan addresses processes and procedure, maybe we should not talk about inadequate processes and procedure. We should talk about non-adherence or non-implementation of the audit action plan. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think most of this is where the Honourable Members raised issues that the Portfolio Committee must interrogate the Department, and some of the inputs that the, from the Honourable Members that what we've addressed in this presentation. It helps them, but I don't know. Coming to maybe to the last one on the inadequate controls and processes and the action plan. What we do is, as soon we are starting with the audit now. So what we do is we take the action plan that they compile, and we look at that action plan, and we make sure that what they've got in that action plan will address the shortcomings. So if there's something we feel must come into that action plan, we will discuss it with the department and say, but we think this should be also in there to make sure that they address the control deficiencies. So yes, we look at it, and as I think I mentioned it during the presentation, we do on a quarterly basis. We look at this action plan and see how far are they with what they set out to do for the current year on the action plan. I hope that addresses the Honourable Member's question. What else, Honourable? On interactions. Honourable Chair, through you. We interact on a regular basis with the department. We've got a relationship with the DG, the DDGs, where we can, if we pick up anything there, we can go to them and discuss issues with them. So we do on a regular basis discuss issues with them. During the audit process, we've got weekly audit steering committee meetings, where we discuss the findings that we've got and what the impact that findings can have on the audit report at the end of the audit. And then they can still see what they can be addressed before the final audit has been finalized. So we do interact with them. I can just reply on the performance information. As we said, the previous years it was qualified on usefulness and reliability. We had workshops with all the program in the department. And during this workshops, that's where we actually assist them to sort out their issues on performance information. So where we pick up things, we definitely have meetings and discuss it with the audit team. From our side, we try to assist and help him in the right direction to make sure that they get everything where it's supposed to be. And then on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that was in the 13-14 financial year. But we must just, if we talk about the irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful, the service has been given to department or the audit team. They received, if they bought something, they received it. It's just that there was no money has been stolen or, how can I say, it's just the process has not been followed to ensure that the best price has been got from the suppliers.
Thank you, Auditor General. Means that there is no body will be arrested, Honorable Tolsa. There is no money stolen.
Honorable Chair, just on honestly, the talk about the impact. That's what I said also. At this stage, the AG goes so far to look at the reliability of the information that they give us on the performance information, and that's where we say a recommendation is that the portfolio committee department must put in their IPPs and their to say what's the impact that they want to get to. And that's where the portfolio committee can intervene and say, now you must report to us, because at this stage we don't look at the impact, because it's not in our process at this stage to look at that. But that's purely the department's responsibility, because they get the funds. They must make sure they can just take these funds, make sure what they want to do, what's the impact that we're going to have at the end of the day.
Any question, Honourable Member? Honourable Maloy?
No, just one last question, but let me start with a follow-up. I was raising an issue about inadequate processes and procedure. Because if I'm to pose that question to the department and say you have inadequate processes and procedure, and then they refer me to the audit action plan and say, in our audit action plan, we are attending to this matter. These are the processes, these are the procedures, and so on and so forth. Am I saying, is it correct for you to say inadequate process and procedure instead of saying failure to implement the audit action plan? But it's up to you. You'll just advise me. Then the last part, Nqa Farms, internal audit, and the audit committee. Is this a recurring problem? I know that the Nqa Farm is now going to ARC and so on, but is it recurring? Is it a repeat finding, or is it happening only for this financial year?
Honorable Chair, just on Nqa Farm, yes, it's recurring. I think it's already of the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's exactly the same on that too. Audit committee and the internal audit. Just on the action plan again, they should actually if they don't comply with the action plan. The action plan is there also to enhance the process and procedures. So if it comes to that, we've got the same issues in the future, it can be then that they actually don't address the reaction plan, because the action plan should be to address all the policies and processes that's in place to enhance that processes. So if it's, we go still have the same issues every year, it says to us, even if there will be now processes and they don't comply with it, then they don't actually comply with the action plan.
Honorable Maloy, it says, in that regard, therefore, in the reporting, whether it should not be failure to adhere to their own action plan as you engage with the department, than to say as reported here. Because you see, as we are going to engage with the department, they will say these issues are appearing on the action plan. We've interacted with the AG with this audit plan, but they don't follow and they don't implement that audit. So in terms of your reporting, is it adequate? Is it not helpful to say they've not adhered to their own action plan so that we are able to follow it up? If I understood you very well, Honorable Malu, yes. AG?
Honorable Chair, yeah, on that, if we compile our root causes and those things, we're consistent within the office. But I think we will look at specific at that. I think that's maybe a thing that we can bring in future to say they haven't complied with the action plan, because that's an important thing. At this stage, I agree. Actually, we don't say specific that they don't apply to comply with the action plan. I think we can in future maybe look at a specific look at that, and maybe then in addressing the portfolio committee, we can tell them actually that say this was all the actions, this action hasn't been complied with, and then we can take it further. But that's a thing that we will just have to go back to our technical people to say how do we bring it into our audit report to specifically look at the action plan and how we address that as an issue.
It's just a follow-up now on the question of recommendations. I wanted to check if are you satisfied now with the manner in which department is responding, or these recommendations are carried out, because there always make recommendations.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the issue of skills, or the lack of skills, it was reported last year as well, and this year. And I wasn't here the previous year, Moss. So I'd just like to know, is it the same skills shortage? Is it new skills shortages? Is it people that have been there and left? That's the one issue. And then, Chairperson, the other comment is, it says here, irregular expenditure is expenditure in contravention of key legislation. Now, when you break the law, I think there should be some sort of penalty. I don't know why we're so easy on crime in this government, Chairperson. It's why these people are doing all sorts of funny things.
Okay, AG. Maybe just before you respond, AG, on honorable members, you remember that we found that there was a process of the previous committee. And we went to Ngeha ourselves and convinced ourselves that Ngeha must be deregistered, and the department must see how either they take it to the province or within the department or within one of the entities. And the department came to us to say that they are looking at that. I think when we interact with the department, we should actually follow up on the frustrating of that decision to deregister Ngeha. How far are they? I think that's one of the things that, which actually they'll use it as an excuse not to establish internal audit and the audit committee, because they are deregistering it. So I just thought I must remind the honorable members, you want to ask a question. I thought they are responding. Honorable Sultana, thanks
for the opportunity, Chair. Yes, just for the benefit of the large number of relatively new members in this committee, I want to say that a whole financial year has come and gone since the department came with that proposal to us, that is to transfer NGEGA to fall under ARC, and you gave them the okay formally in the National Assembly. But they don't seem to be finalizing the actioning of that decision, and it is a matter of concern. Thank you.
Actually, that's what the Honorable Malue was raising in contest in the context of the report of the AG. And if you have a department who agrees that this we have not done these things right, they come up with a plan, they want to implement, but they don't follow that plan, what do you call that? How do you report that? So, and I think when we come to this, when we're going to engage department, those are the questions that must be asked to the department. How long does it have take department to do to deregister that entity? And looking at the report, are there any questions that you are going to see in the report that you would see that the decision to deregister was very correct, and you don't know why they are not doing it as quick as possible. But they will say it's a treasury, you know, I know that it's treasury who is supposed to do that. I don't want to speak to them, but let's wait for them to come and give us those answers. AG, you can respond to the questions, those that have been raised, if you have.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Regarding satisfied with the department on the our recommendations. In overall, we are happy with them addressing our recommendation on root causes, but there are still some instances that they still not. Actually complying with all that we recommend. That's why we say the slow response, where we still have certain material adjustments to the financial statements. So that's where they can actually improve on it. We're satisfied with what they're doing and from our recommendations, but it's still, it looks like lack of skills of specifically in the regional offices of the department where they do approvals. I think that the skills, there's a problem there. On the supply chain management, that's what the root cause that we say is it's a skills problem in the supply chain management, specifically on MLRF. It was 400 million, and now okay, this year there's a improvement, but still it's 12.5 million. So it shows that they don't follow the policies and processes for supply chain management. And that's where we say that the skills are still not where it should be in a supply chain management department.
Honorable Youngblood, the issue that is raised by Honorable Paulson, AG, this thing that irregular expenditure means that people have break the law. So why there's no consequence management? But it went to say people must be arrested, which might not mean that, because we must have a case when taking people to get arrested. But with regard to department, in some instances, it might not even be the issue of the skills when it comes to supply chain management. It's deliberately avoiding to follow the legislation because of the personal or people's interest in that section. So how do we then help each other in terms of making sure that there is a consequence management? because you see the word is very strong, but you look at the side of the penalty, the penalty is not very clear what should it be. But if you say it to ordinary person, irregular expenditure, it says you've used the money in not in line with legislation, but the penalty is very clear. So I think it's something that you can take it as a homework and see how we want to assist others to deal with it. Honorable Yongbu.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question of clarity. We've seen over the last couple of reports from the AG that there's repeat findings in respect of a number of the entities. What I would like to know is, you make recommendations, you suggest how things can be rectified. What I would like to know is, do you keep a check? Do you check to see if they're actually following the recommendations, or do you wait until the next time you have to put together a report and then make the same findings? Thank you.
This one I must respond on your behalf.
Honourable Chair, just to come back to the irregular expenditure. If they pick up any irregular expenditure, the department must investigate and see why it happened, and then they must identify if there's a person responsible for that, who's that a person, and there should be consequence management. And that's where maybe on this that the portfolio committee must also then come to specific to the MLRF. I know at this stage when we finalise the report, they haven't yet started with the investigation of the irregular expenditure. But maybe they can then just, when they come to the department comes, they can just clarify on what they're going to do. And I think that's where the portfolio committee also should hold the department accountable to make sure that if there's any irregular expenditure, there must be quick investigations, and there must be that consequence management. And that's that. On the recommendations on that one, we don't look at just at the, as I said, at the year end. During the whole audit process, on a quarterly basis, we look at that. Because on a quarterly basis, we also discuss the key controls with the department. So that's where we then will look at how far are they with this. And then during the audit process, if we pick up anything that was in the action plan, we will actually allude them to that and say, but this is a recommendation, that was the root cause, but we still pick it up, and then they must then take corrective action further. But we do that on a regular basis. We look at, it's not just a once-off thing for us to look at the action plan and the recommendations.
Any other thing, honorable members? I think, thank you, AG's office and your team for the presentation, and we will continuously engage with issues that you have raised, and this portfolio committee, I understand them that they agreed with your recommendation. We will make sure that are being implemented those recommendations as tabled in your report. Thank you very much. And you are released. Thank you. Honourable members, you can spread the legs 2 minutes to allow them to connect. Honourable members, Honourable Filter and your team can come back, and the team from FFC is ready. You're welcome, FFC. This is the Portfolio Committee of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestry. It's not for the first time that we engage with the bill. But we have new members that have joined the committee, which is Honorable Mapanga, the one that is coming, just joined the committee. The rest, they've been here. Jace? Okay, and you're welcome again to this BRRR meeting. we're in your hands. You can take us through your presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to Honorable Members. My name is Ramos Mabugu. I am the head of FFC delegation today, and I'm accompanied on my right by Mr. Halim Daoud, who is our program manager for Provincial Budget Analysis Unit and is stationed here in our Cape Town office. And on my left is Mr. Henry Exton, who is our parliamentary liaison officer and serves the commission from the Cape Town office. In terms of our briefing today, it's in the context of the BRRR reports, and we thought to share with you five areas for the benefit of members that are new. I'll say a few words on the Financial and Fiscal Commission and its mandate very briefly, and then say some words on evolution of agriculture and its contribution to the economy, giving contextual factors. Then from Section 3 onwards, we will do a departmental analysis of their budgets using our previously discussed methodology, where we try to pick up trends for yourselves and point out to a seven-year analysis on what has been happening with the budgets and issues that we think will empower the portfolio committee in picking up with those trends. Then, in response to your invitation later, we'll also look at the annual report for the department and carry out our analysis on the basis of those reports. And then, if time permits, we will mention some of our recommendations made as part of the Division of Revenue process that are in the pipeline, which the department is dealing with. Now, in terms of the role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, we are an independent, permanent, and statutory institution that is established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution, and we function in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act that was recently amended in 2015. And in terms of our mandate, is to make recommendations as envisaged in Chapter 13 of the Constitution or in national legislation to Parliament, provincial legislatures, and any other organ of state as determined by national legislation. And in the main, we focus primarily on equitable division of nationally collected revenue among the three spheres of government and then other financial and fiscal matters. And that's why a lot of the work that we do touches a lot on what takes place in the provinces and in the municipalities and how the national department exercises oversight on the institutions that are operating at provincial and local level. Now, in terms of overall context for agriculture, forestry, and fisheries in the context of the broader economy, we start from the premise that despite its small contribution to the economy, at less than 3% since the early 1990s, agriculture is still an important sector of the economy. And this is because it has large linkages with the rest of the economy, and that makes its contribution to the economy much larger relative to its overall size. In 2015, it contributed approximately 5% of total exports, making it an important earner of net foreign exchange. However, when it comes to employment in agriculture, we think here it is punching below its weight because it is much lower than other comparable countries with same agriculture size. Fisheries contributes roughly 0.1% to gross domestic product, but plays a significant role in local economies with a strong fisheries sector, such as the province that we're in. Forestry sector Has maintained a trade balance of 25.6 billion rands in 2015, and most of the investment in forestry takes place in what we have classified as rural provinces. So from that premise, the sector can play a significant role in contributing to rural development because it has a large footprint, particularly in those rural provinces. This slide looks at agriculture performance. As you all know, we have a dualistic agriculture sector made up mainly of commercial and emerging farmers. Commercial produces around about 95% of agricultural output, and the rest is produced by the emerging farmers. But the size or number of commercial farmers has been declining, standing at around 37,000 in 2014. And this is due to consolidation of farm units. The bulk of emerging farmers are located in what has now been termed 27 priority districts. And these districts have a common characteristic that they lie in rural areas and they lack basic infrastructure, which are important determinants for how we see the strategy for agriculture going forward. So there are those 27 priority districts and bulk of our emerging farmers, which is a core area for the department, lie in those districts. In terms of market destination for our agricultural products, the main one is the European Union, accounting for 32% share in exports. Africa takes 31%, quite sizable. Asia 20%, and the USA 3% in 2014. And that anticipated to increase once issues around AGOA get sorted out. The next slide touches on agricultural employment, and again prefaced by my earlier remarks that it is here where we punch below our weight, in that compared to countries with the same size of agriculture, our contribution to employment is smaller. So there is scope for increasing employment within agriculture when one just does international benchmarking of agricultural sizes. Now, looking at recent figures, labor force survey shows a reversal in agricultural employment in first two quarters of 2016 after initial strong growth in 2015. And a big part of the reasons for this recent decline that we're seeing is the ongoing drought effects compounding the overall stagnant economic growth taking place across most of our economic sectors. In terms of the drought impact, these two graphs show us what has been taking place, but just to say six provinces to date have been declared disaster areas. And staple foods such as maize and beans are the hardest hit. A worrisome factor is we are set to become a significant net importer of grains in 7 years. And according to estimations, 5 million tons of maize and 2 million tons of wheat will be imported between May 2016 and April 2017. And against backdrop of currency depreciation, at least until recently, and the rise in global grain prices, that will result in significant costs. That was an indicative figure of around 11.5 billion rands for imported grains, plus the increased pressure on timeous and efficient delivery of imports due to constrained infrastructure capacity for agricultural bulk operations at Transnet. But that figure could be tempered by recent strengthening of the exchange rate until 2 days ago, although this morning it is again started strengthening a little bit. But the actual figure will change according to the spot exchange rate on the day, and depending on the nature of the contracts we enter into. Now, because we do bring the financial aspects and the output aspects together as a commission, the guiding principle for where agriculture is going we take as the National Development Plan. So what does the National Development Plan say about agriculture? Well, it envisages that the sector is one of the key levers for job creation and ensuring food security. It has identified four objectives for the sector: create 1 million jobs in agriculture, agro-processing and related sectors by 2030, increase investments in agricultural technologies and research and development, realize a food surplus with one-third produced by small-scale farmers or households, the ones where we said most are now residing in the 27 priority districts. Create security of tenure for communal farmers, especially women. So those are the four underpinning objectives in the National Development Plan to 2030 for the sector. Now, what we see in our analysis is a reduction in the growth of government expenditure overall and also for the particular sector. And this is due in the main to lower than anticipated economic outlook for the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework. And we think that is likely to have an impact on the medium-term spending plans for the department that you exercise oversight on, as well as its strategy to achieve the National Development Plan goals. The amount that has been pumped into the system for drought relief, for example, needs to be assessed in terms of adequacy and its impact. Otherwise, gains that have been made in the sector towards attaining National Development Plan goals could be compromised or lost if we don't do this. Now, with this background, Honorable Chair, I'll ask my colleague now to go into more details in terms of the departmental budget and our analysis of their performance. As you will recall, last year when you called us, we were raising a lot of issues around underspending. And the flavor of the discussion this time around is that underspending isn't anymore an issue that we are coming with. So we'll be emphasizing a lot more the value for money of the improvement in the spending. So there have been improvements in terms of spending compared to the last time we came, and the new issues that we're raising to empower the portfolio committee around our suggestions on increasing value for money for that spend.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. So just to briefly look at the department, provide an overview of the department. It consists of six programs, and the mandate of the department is to address production and consumption in the agriculture, forestry and fishery sector. The focus of the department over the medium term is informed by the National Development Plan and focuses on key areas such as improving food security, creating jobs, increasing contribution of the agricultural sector to GDP. Subsistence and smallholder farmers are also focused within all of these priorities. So there's quite a host of priorities that the department is focusing on over the medium term, and this relates to the National Development Plan. So just to look at some of the spending trends as well as the MTF budget for the department, and here we break it down per program. But on an aggregate level, the department is being allocated slightly 20 billion rand over the MTF period. So over the next 3 years, the department is receiving 20 billion rand, which when you look at it in terms of taking inflation into account, is actually a decline of 0.87% per annum. So as Dr. Mabuko mentioned earlier on, the fiscus is constrained at the national level. And when we look at the impact it's having on the department, we can see that in real terms, the department's allocation of the MTF is actually declining. The largest program for the department is Program 2, and this consumes approximately 32% of the total budget, which is agricultural production, health, and food safety. But with respect to all of the programs of the department, this is the only one that's actually increasing over the MTF period by 2%. All the other programs are actually declining. So what we are seeing here is that effectively the department has to reprioritize within its baseline budget. So where the department is increasing allocations, it has to consider decreasing allocations in other programs of the department. Now, with respect to food security and agrarian reform, we see that there's also been a marginal average decline of this program. And just to go a bit more into the food security and the agrarian reform program, given the significance of the program, and also in light of the drought that we've experienced, it consumes 30% of the total department's budget over the MTF period. And what we have noticed is that this particular program has actually experienced a positive real growth of 5%, or just over 5%, in the previous four years that we've looked at. However, over the next 3 years, we see that this particular program is actually set to decline by 0.8% over the MTF period. Now, when we look at the specific sub-programs of this particular program, just to assess where the cuts are actually taking place, what we do notice is that while on aggregate the program is declining, the food security sub-program is actually increasing by 1.2%. So the department hasn't cut on the food security sub-program, which is actually the key program in terms of addressing the challenges that we are having with respect to the drought. It's actually coming from other sub-programs that is supporting the total output of the program. However, the increase is 1.2%, and here one can debate whether that is significant enough to address the drought challenges that we are currently experiencing. Now, looking at the line items of the department in terms of how it's spending on these line items, transfers and subsidies reflect the largest line item, and it's basically been a marginal annual growth that is projected over the MTF period. There's been sustained decline in goods and services over the entire period, and this is consistent with National Treasury's cost containment measures, identifying non-core spending areas for spending cuts so that the resources can be channeled into service delivery areas in departments. So we're not too concerned about that. Compensation of employees is set to decline by real average annual 2.4% per annum over the MTF period. And this is due to a cabinet-wide decision that was taken to lower the national aggregate expenditure ceiling specifically with respect to compensation. We know that compensation is one of the biggest cost drivers in government, and there's been measures put in place to contain the expansion of the public sector wage bill. And we can see the impact of this that it's having on the department's budget. Now, Madam Chair, moving on to the next section, which looks at the annual report analysis. And here we looked at the most recent annual report that has been audited by the AG. And what we do here is we basically we look at essentially the spending of the department in 2015-16, and we compare it to the previous year, 2014-15. And what we have assessed is that department spending has improved from 99% in 2014-15 to close to 100% in the 15-16 financial year. So the department's problem no longer is a question of underspending as it was in the previous year. But from the Commission's point of view, what is key concern is now where the department is getting value for money from its funded activities. And I think this should be the focus in terms of assessing the department's improvement going forward. So when we compared the budget that has been spent against the performance targets that the department achieved, we see that there's actually an inconsistency. So on the one hand, the department spent its full allocation, but on the other hand, it only achieved 78% of its performance indicators. So what this suggests is that the budgeting, as well as the program information functions of the department, may not be properly aligned. So on the one hand, we are allocating resources and we are coming up with our budget, and on the other side, we are specifying performance indicators. But what we are seeing is that at the departmental level and at the implementation level, these two key functions may not be working together effectively, so that we see that if you have 100% of the budget that is spent, a much higher percentage of the indicators should also be achieved at the same time. Now, we assess the performance indicators, and here I'm just going to go into a bit more detail with respect to our assessment. And what we found was that many indicators that we came across were actually quite vague, and they're also very difficult to measure. And this was especially under the administration program, as well as the trade and market access programs of the department. And here I just want to emphasize that when we looked at the findings of the Auditor General, they found that 29% of the indicators under the trade and market access program was not specific. And also, they found found that the usefulness of performance indicators under this program needs to be assessed. So they had serious questions with regard to the usefulness of the performance indicators under the trade and market access program. But just to give an example, one of the indicators under this program says implement trade agreements and participate in trade negotiations. So when we look at that indicator, we're not exactly sure what is being measured. So if we had to assess whether the department achieved that performance indicator, how do we know whether it has been achieved? So what did the department actually do to implement trade agreements and participate in trade negotiations, so that we can basically say, yes, the department achieved it, no, the department did not achieve it. Also, another thing that we found was that quite often two indicators are often combined into one, and this reflects essentially the quality of the indicators. So when you have two indicators that are combined into one, how do you know whether the indicator has been achieved? For example, if only part of it has been achieved and not the other. So National Treasury best practice is that one particular activity should be linked to one indicator so that one can get a clear sense of whether an indicator has been achieved or whether it has not been achieved. We also found that reasons for deviations often lacked clarity and do not necessarily pinpoint the root cause of the deviation. So, for example, in one indicator, the department did not meet the target of allocating rights to 9 fishing sectors. And in the deviation column, the department stated the deadline was extended twice, and that was basically the explanation. It does not go on to explain the reason why the target was not achieved. And this is really the issue that we are interested in, to understand exactly what are the challenges in terms of not meeting those performance targets. We also found that the performance information that are collected from the provinces is difficult to evaluate and should be treated with caution. So the National Department reports on national indicators that is under its control, but it also reports on sector indicators that are implemented at a provincial level and collects performance information from these provincial departments. But the challenge here, and this is something that the department also raises in its annual report, is that quite often it's difficult to know whether the information that provinces are reporting on is actually correct, and because there's very little audit information to track how the department actually collected that information. And just to provide you an example of here, a number of households that benefited from food and nutrition security initiatives. So the National Department is has challenges in terms of validating whether the numbers that are reported by the provinces are actually correct or not. The department is also performing poorly on some key human resources, wallet service delivery indicators, and here we're just highlighting one or two for the portfolio committee to consider. The one is that the department has finalized less than 10% of misconduct cases reported within 100 days. And from our assessment, the number of misconduct cases that appear quite significant when we compare to other national departments that we've looked at. So when we look at other national departments and we take that as a benchmark and we compare it with the Department of Agriculture, we actually find that the misconduct cases are quite significant. And the reasons provided by the department for these misconduct cases relate primarily to theft or fraud, and in also absence from work. And then secondly, the department experienced challenges with food security initiatives, especially converting unutilized communal land to productive use. And the reason that was cited here was that drought was the main reason for the poor performance. This particular indicator, of course, is quite critical for food security, and the department does not state what are some of the initiatives that they will take in order to address the shortcoming in this particular indicator. Now, even though many of the implementation challenges in the sector reside at the provincial level, we did not come across any indicators that measure any technical or oversight support that is provided by the provincial departments. Now, Madam Chair, just moving on to the next section, which looks at financial management. And I'll just quickly go through this because the AG may have touched on this and you may have engaged with him regarding this. But just to highlight some issues that we've picked up, there's been a significant increase in contingent liabilities against the department in 2015-16. We see here that it's increased from 115 million, roughly, to 147 million. In 2015-2016. And these contingent liabilities or claims against the department are actually legal cases that has been brought against the department. And from our assessment, there's been no information that has been provided on the nature of these cases, the reason for the increase in the claims, and also how the department is going to address this problem going forward. We did not also come across any performance indicator of how the department is actually going to address this particular problem. The Commission also notes with concern the significant rise in staff and student debt write-offs. And this raises questions around whether the department is actually taking any active steps to avoid any potential abuse of departmental resources. So here we only have an idea that staff debt write-offs have increased, but we could not come across any information that gave us an indication of what the total staff debt is at this stage. So there's clearly a gap in terms of financial management that the department needs to look at. Moving on to irregular expenditure, and the AG may have spoken about this, there's been a decline in irregular expenditure in 2015-16 compared to 2014-15, although it's still a concern for the Commission. And most of the irregular expenditure relates to non-compliance of procurement processes, as you are aware. And currently, there are investigations that have been undertaken to assess the veracity of this, to assess these cases. Now, moving on to the conditional grants that we looked at. Once again, Madam Chair, we're quite happy with the spending of the agricultural conditional grants in 2015-16. In fact, in total, almost 100% of conditional grants have been spent, compared to an average for the previous 3 years of 95%. So agricultural conditional grants are being spent. And this is largely due to more provinces using entities as implementing agents. So what we see is that provinces are no longer implementing activities around these conditional grants, but rather having entities with under the supervision of the department who is now responsible for implementing these conditional grants. What this suggests is that it doesn't necessarily mean that these conditional grants have been spent. It just means that it has been transferred from the department to the public entity that is responsible for implementing these conditional grants. So on the department's budget, it reflects as 100% spent, but we need to check on the public entity whether those allocations have actually been spent or not. Now, the Commission's submission for the Division of Revenue for 18-19, which it tabled in Parliament at the beginning of June this year, focused on rural development, IGFR implementation for rural development. And we did some assessment of the agricultural grants. And what we found was that CASP and the recapitalization program, which is implemented by the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs, they're essentially funding the same activities, which creates duplication as well as inefficiencies in the system. Also, we found that the allocation framework for agricultural grants are misaligned to policy objectives. So the policy objective for agricultural grants is to increase agricultural production. But what we found was that the Northern Cape receives the largest share of agricultural grants despite contributing the least to agricultural output. And this is largely because when we look at the assessment criteria of conditional grants, the focus is on area size and not necessarily on agricultural output per se. Now, here's just some graphs. We basically assess the growth in the allocations to the CASP grant. We know that the CASP grant is largely focused on agricultural output. And we looked at the provincial GVA trend, and that essentially relates to the agricultural output within a particular province. And what we found was that from 2005-06 onwards, there's been a significant rise in the allocations, in the growth of allocations to the CASP grant. But when you look at the provincial agricultural output, we actually see that it's been relatively stable. There hasn't been a significant rise, similar to the rise in the allocations to the CASP grant. And what this suggests to the Commission is that the agricultural transfers contribute very little to the agricultural output of these respective rural provinces. Just moving on to the entities that report to DAF, there are essentially six entities that fall under the budget of the department. And here, from our assessment, we see that some entities that receive transfers from DAF have consistently underspent in both financial years, both in 2014-15, and 15-16, we see that Marine Living Resource Fund and Otto Sport Biological Council have underspent significantly over both years. And when we went through the report, annual report of the Department of Agriculture, we could not come across any reasons for the deviation in spending by these public entities. The department did not indicate what was the exact reasons for the continued or persistent underspending by these public entities. So just with respect to some concluding remarks from our side, the National Development Plan envisages a major role for the department in creating employment, growth, as well as fostering food security. However, the recent drought could severely impact the sector in achieving those NDP goals. From a commission's perspective, there's a need to assess drought relief efforts and whether interventions that have been taking place are effective in avoiding ongoing job losses in the sector that we've highlighted at the beginning of the presentation. Now, aspects that we feel require attention are the following. Grant funding is being spent, but we need to assess the impact of the spending and whether the public entities that are implementing those grants are actually spending the funds. The quality of performance information in the APP does not allow for effective oversight over the department's performance, and the financial management practices of the department have some weaknesses that should be urgently addressed. And here we've just identified a few, which relates to loans to staff, human resource practices, as well as irregular expenditure. And the reasons for underspending by the entities is not clear and therefore should be clarified. Manager, I'm not sure if you'd like us to go through the recommendations that we've tabled relating to this department. Yes, okay. We've tabled quite a few recommendations relating to this department in our submission for the 2018-19 Division of Revenue. And I'll just go through them, just touch on them. We're still waiting for government response to these recommendations. It's currently being processed. So the first recommendation speaks about establishing a framework for implementing, evaluating and monitoring key agricultural grants that are targeted at subsistence and small-scale farmers. So in our analysis today, we could see that the funds are being transferred to the public entities. We're not sure where the public entities are spending the funds, but we also could see that there was very little contribution of these grants to the GVA or the output, agricultural output of these provinces. So therefore, there's a need to actually have some kind of framework in place where we are able to track whether the expenditures of the department are actually leading to output growth or agricultural output of provinces. We also recommended that the CASP and the recapitalization program should be consolidated under one funding program for post-settlement support to emerging land reform, emerging and land reform farmers under DAF, as it has more expertise in the area of agriculture. And the reason here is because currently both funding instruments are servicing the same target audience and are funding essentially the same activities. Also, we recommended that to improve land reform outcomes, we should coordination between rural development and agriculture should be strengthened at both policy as well as implementation level. The next recommendation relates to the way that the conditional grants are currently being allocated. And what we note here is that the bulk of municipalities where agriculture accounts for a fifth of total agricultural output are your B3 and B4 municipalities, and they relate really to your small rural towns as well as your very rural villages or municipalities. So what we are recommending here is that rather than a relatively blanket approach to allocation, which is currently taking place, agriculture-based grant allocations should be weighted to ensure that they reflect need as well as intensity associated with location of agricultural activities. The next recommendation speaks about strengthening coordination as well as implementation of programs which target displaced farm workers. And here we are recommending that this should take place through including farm evictees among the beneficiaries for housing in the rural towns, access to land for own production agri-villages program, and centralizing the reporting of evictions and improved data collection. So this recommendation may not directly relate to the Department of Agriculture, but is definitely need for it to consider this recommendation in terms of coordinating its response with other sector departments. And then finally, Madam Chief, we also recommended that government should clarify the legislative mandate and responsibility of municipalities in relation to food security. And this recommendation is a recommendation that we've made in response to the 2015-16 Division of Revenue. And we can check whether this recommendation has been implemented or not. Madam Chair, I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, FSC. Honorable members, that was the presentation from FSC. You are now welcome to engage with the presentation, honorable members. Honorable Njaisa, honorable Polse, honorable Maloy, honorable Sultane, and honorable Kappa. And Chief Kodokulu, the last one. So before Honorable Njaisa starts, in the middle of the discussion, I'll dash out, Honorable Maloy will take over the chair as I'll be going to another meeting. Honorable Njaisa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'm just worried about this death of the turnips. So I want to check now with you whether there are no proper plans on how these debts can be collected from the people that we loaned. More especially on the staff. Perhaps I may understand now in the case of students, as if the department had foreseen the idea of the fees was false. So perhaps now they could be in a proper mode to collect this. But now, this, if there are proper plans now on how to collect these monies, then now, were these plans properly implemented, if they are, I just want to check on that. Because that there should be plans on how to collect monies. If you borrow someone money, then there should be a plan how to get it back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the briefing. Chairperson, it's not really questions, it's just comments, and I welcome the briefing. Because once again it highlights the two major problems that we have within agriculture that doesn't seem to go away, and also the fact that you asked what we are doing about the recurring drought problem that we have. Now, there's a solution in sight, and we have to just find ways of actually addressing drought other than praying for rain. Because our prayers aren't answered. I mean, God wants us to use our brain and not be lazy and rely on Him to make things easy for us. We must build desalination plants and we must feed the rural provinces. We must stop being lazy and relying on prayers because, you know, you pray to God to thank you for the beautiful brain, but don't pray for Him to make your life easy when He's given you the brain. And then, of course, the issue of food security, and we don't have an issue with food security. We got lots of food. We even export some of it. I mean, the food that we require, like maize and wheat, is because we haven't used our brain to build desalination plants to irrigate the areas that need irrigation to plant our grain. I mean, we can make much more of the land arable and use it for agriculture if we just use that brain. I mean, there's countries in the desert that have orchards, and that's desert. So we've got no excuse. The problem with food security, that's not really the problem. The problem is with nutrition security, making sure that households do not go to bed hungry at night. So we've got lots of food in stocks, but it highlights the serious inequalities that we have. And we need to find ways of addressing this. And like I said earlier, let people take responsibility for their own nutrition. Let us have an initiative, a program where we go to households and give them seeds and we encourage them to plant. And it's really, I promise you, it's very sexy. I can show you my garden. I got strawberries. I harvested the seed from a single strawberry.
Now I've got a whole garden of strawberries, very simple. But like I said, you know, you can pray for manna from heaven, or you can just make an effort. We actually have to teach people that once we made the effort, we let nature take its course, and we can pray that it's the proper course. So I think the food nutrition issue is something that we have to address through proper programs, and I don't mean handing out food. Let's hand out seeds and implements, that sort of thing. Let us get them to irrigate schoolyards instead of turning it into ganglands, and that they can start taking pride in. And also the other, now there's a third real challenge that I see that we've got here, and it was brought up by the recommendations here, is the issue of farm evictions. We should make a move to make farm evictions illegal. Really. And not say, oh, okay, let them evict, we will build houses for them. It must be made illegal. You work for a farmer for 20 years and now you're being disposed of like a san. You know, koi is the good people, san is the disposable people. Mustn't do that. We must implement laws that prevent these farmers from exploiting people for 20 years and then just disposing of them. It should not be alternate arrangements for people that are being evicted. We mustn't make it easy on these farmers, on these thieves of land. Okay? So this is one of the issues, and I think if we are responsible for agriculture, let us also be responsible for those people working in agriculture. So this committee must support private members' bill to outlaw farm evictions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Not six.
Okay. Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. Just three things. The first one, I think we must agree with the FFC that achieving 100% or spending 100% of your budget but not achieving all the indicators is not quite helpful. It raises a lot of questions. And this is the matter which we'll have to raise sharply with the department, just to indicate to the portfolio committee as to how do they spend 100% but achieve 78% of the indicators. We'll have to raise it sharply with them. Now the question to the FFC, your functions amongst others is to make recommendations to organs of state on financial and fiscal matters in accordance with Section 220 of the Constitution. Now, the question which I would want to pose to yourself, you know, the department says to the committee that we are seriously underfunded. Our budget to do this important thing in this important sector, which is part of the 9-point plan, which is raised sharply in the National Development Plan and so on, is only 6 billion. And the bulk of that 6 billion will go to the compensation of employees and so on and so forth. What are you doing about it as FFC? Or your focus is just on the allocation between national, provincial, and local government. You don't deal with departments specifically. Because I thought one of the things which you might want to raise as the FFC is specifically that one, because your responsibility is to deal with financial and fiscal matters. I thought that you will deal with that one. If you can zoom into that one, I'll be very happy. The second matter which I would also want to raise with yourself. In terms of the FFC Act again, subsection 2, capital A, it says if an organ of the state is to assign any responsibility
to any other sphere, it must report to yourself. And also it must deal with issues of financial implications and so on. Now, the suggestions that you are making about local government and so on, having some responsibilities on food security and so on, what will be the implications? Because you are dealing here with a department that is highly underfunded, but equally we, in one way or the other, suggesting that we need to give some functions to local government to deal with, particularly around food security. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maloyi. As you come this side, let's recognize Honorable Feltan. But FFC, just to add on the question, you know, in the last meeting, we've raised the issue of the budget system and the allocation, revenue allocation to provinces and what do they call them? You might well, whether it's pillars or that informs the allocation, where you still have provinces that are richer getting more allocation. But in terms of the principle of democracy or of South Africa is that the richer must subsidize the poor. But in terms of allocation, is the other way around. The richer still getting more. You still have Western Cape, Gauteng getting more allocation and poor rural provinces getting less. But at the same time, the system that is used by Treasury, they are using incremental system as opposed to zero budgeting, which in the process undermine even the effort that departments, as they initiate or build its own capacity to perform. For instance, if your Treasury at this financial year decide to cut your budget because you have not spent the money, in terms of the mechanism to replace what they've cut, they don't have that mechanism. They just follow the baseline. There is no, to change the baseline of Treasury is becoming a taboo, sort of. So how would, with your help as FFC, how do you assist in the reforms in terms of Treasury, how they allocate resources, and to make sure that, because one of the things that, as we analyze the triple oppression, we continuously say the richer becomes richer, but in terms of allocation, we still give them. Even if you look at the budget, how it's allocated, generally, you will see, if we talk about economic cluster, the lot of money, the incentive even of job creation and all those things goes to the Volkswagen, BMW, and it's not where the voters are. So how then do you reform the system? Because for me, the problem is the system, and you are the relevant people to look at how the system has been constituted and how do we reform and make sure that we direct resources where it matters most. So I think members will listen to the answer, because for me, of course, I'm sorry I have to leave now.
Anything is better than the AFC, except for the AFC. Honorable Yutani, it's your turn now.
Thank you, sir. Well, my opening remark, Chair, is that this is one of the most depressing but truth-revealing reports. Extremely depressing. But I'll put some questions that will indicate why. But perhaps just to link that up, I'll start with my remark on the very last section of the report. This reference to the fact that food production is not a competency of municipalities. When I was working for our Tambo Development Agency, 2012, December, they came up a national circular number 58, 2012, to the effect that, agriculture is not a competency of local government. And I challenged that even at that lowest level to say, this simply cannot be true. This is an unfortunate and cruel and deliberate misinterpretation of our constitution. You can look up section, I think it's section 153, between 153, 152, and 151 of the constitution, where the constitution says local government must prioritize social needs as well as local economic development. Now, you can put agriculture now down there. We had been practicing, as O.R. Tambo, particularly that institution. We had been involved for about 10 years at that time, close to 10 years, in the practice of producing food in the form of maize and vegetables for the poor people of O.R. Tambo, about 1.9 million of them, before a portion thereof was taken over to Alfred and so on. And this had never been challenged. The mayor there, the administration there, was saying, we're using food production as a tool to address the social issue of poverty. Now, how otherwise is the local government expected to fulfill its constitutional mandate to address a fundamental people destroying need if not addressed, that of providing food? We need, as a committee, to put it across to cabinet that this needs to be sorted out once and for all. On my arrival in Parliament in 2014, I tried to raise this issue, but unfortunately, I don't think the minister understood exactly why he had to oppose it. Perhaps it was just because I'm not part of the ANC. But I would still say there is a case here to be clarified, sorted out by the South African cabinet, because now how otherwise does local government address this social issue? So that's where I want to start. I hope, honestly, Chair, that we will be able to take this up in the formal and proper way, such that it becomes part of a cabinet meeting to sort this confusion out. I had a feeling that someone in Treasury had decided to bring back the 1845, genocide, Unongaus, if you know that part of history of South Africa. I come from the area where you can still pinpoint the alleged grave of that Unongaus. I honestly and seriously believe that someone was on that dirty trick. And that's why I get emotional when we see this, so many years into our democracy. So I plead with you to please take it up. We need to correct this once and for all. Let someone decide and tell local government how to address the social need. It's not just about water. People don't get food. They don't fill up their stomachs with water. Not at all. You need food. Who is going to produce that food? Okay, I thought I would start there, Chair. Now, employment, slide 5. Employment is declining in agriculture, and the only reason that the FSC, were deemed prudent to attribute for that is the drought. I would say on the 18th of March in 2015, where one of these towns, Simon something, I think, and the Department of Agriculture told us that employment in this agricultural sector has been going down slowly, in the last 20 years by as much as about 30%, both on the part of the employers, that is the farm owners, as well as the farm workers. you know. So this idea of a drought can only have added to that. And I would challenge, I would request, challenge may sound, unpleasant, but I would request the FFC to go back and find out exactly what is causing this, because that statement was not challenged, and it came from one of the entities, if not from the department itself, you know, at that three-day workshop between the 17th, 18th, and 19th, you know, of March in 2015. We accepted that as fact, and I've been talking to people based on that. It even has an effect on this proposed ESTA bill, which we're handling, that is the eviction of farm dwellers, those statistics. It's impacting negatively on the municipalities, because they've got no land to settle those people once they get evicted from the farms. So a coordinated approach to this, you know, is needed as to why employment is coming down. The impact thereof is that food production locally, you know, is being compromised. Hence now, you know, we are to a large extent impacted, of course, largely by the drought, dependent on food imports. That's just taking money out of the country to create employment for other people elsewhere. Now let's go on to fiscal mismanagement results from poor HR management. As far back as 2009, I was attending a graduation ceremony of the Fort Cox Agricultural School. If I'm not mistaken, maybe Mr. Crapper was there too. I can't remember whether we both attended that. But I remember perfectly well speaking to a middle manager in Bisho Agricultural, you know, division, agricultural department there. And I said to this gentleman, as Ndinga, we need some finance to be able to fulfill our purpose of feeding people. And this gentleman took a good look at me and he said, Feltani, you don't understand what Bisho is about. In that department, we don't talk about development. Our main concern, this is a researcher, our main concern there is who is going to fill up the next vacant post. Don't bother me about that. That's not our language. Now, this was as far back as 2009. So this HR poor management within the Department of Agriculture is an ongoing thing. It has been there for a long time, and unless indeed the department realizes that they are killing the country, you know, we're not going to get anywhere. I don't know what role the FFC, you know, can play in checking up the, you know, the department to give us, you know, a better response to this. That's where the problem of this department lies, by and large. Now, my question next question to the Commission is, are you able to effectively influence budget allocation? If so, by what percentage have you had success in the last 3 years? Let's say budget allocation to a given department is supposed to be, for argument's sake, 5 billion. To what extent have you been able to influence the stuff that comes down to 4 billion because they are not spending all their budget, or to increase it to 6 billion because there is effective use, you know, of the national fiscus? I would like to know their success rate, because I want to be sure that we're talking to the right people, people who have got the legislative and efficiency, technical efficiency to carry out their money. Slide 15. It's not clearly marked, but it's the bottom one if you look at page 7. What is the likely impact of the proposed stemming of fiscal spend on human resources? Given this new national, you know, perspective that there should be stemming, and I think in the weekend newspapers were reading about the fact that there's plans to even encourage older people to take retirement packages earlier in order to cap the spend on human resources. How is that likely to impact on service delivery? Were this to be carried out? I think that's I'm sure that I'm talking to the right people. Slide 18. This failure holds potential social disaster, you know. You know, it's unfortunate that both the minister and the DG are not here. This needs to be communicated to them, you know, very, very clear. Also, the non-validability of information from provinces. I remember this remark, perhaps by the same institution in the previous financial year, or perhaps even the Auditor General. Information from provinces cannot be validated, but we still continue to pump money to them. No punitive measures, no consequent management. They know it as a constitutional right that whether the department likes it or not, they've got to be given money. And guess what? They don't give a, you know, validatable, you know, information and try to account for it. What legislative steps can be taken, you know, to manage this consequence? Slide 19. Poor senior management response and risk management issues, you know, are the root cause of that. Slide 22. What are the legislative steps that can be taken to enforce corrective measures of this alignment between grants and policy? The same applies to the issues raised in slide 23. Surely, someone in a senior position, even escalating to the political desk of the department, has a responsibility to ensure an alignment between the issue of grants and the policy, because cash follows policy. And if there is misalignment, then you're bound to have, you're opening a door for irregular expenditure there and fruitless expenditure. That is where the root cause lies. Someone, you know, is not doing their job. The slide on recommendations, I've already, you know, dealt with that. This was the first point where we're talking about food security and the question as to whether it should be accepted by the South African government broadly that it is, you know, an inherent function of local government. I thank you for the opportunity, Chair, and I'm looking forward to some responses here to them.
Thank you very much, Honorable Qabikulu.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I just wanted just to raise a few things concerning, firstly, utilization of communal land. Chairperson, maybe if one may pose directly to the FFC, the use of communal land, Chairperson, if one may point out, in the previous sittings of the Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, the previous minister, I'm sure there was a clear policy on allocation of mechanization to assist the communities in communal land to utilize the land allocated to them. But currently, we don't see any move towards assisting those people out there. Maybe if the FFC could maybe come up with a, have they ever thought of maybe sitting down with the department so as to assist in identifying the challenge that the department needs to focus on in assisting the people in communal land to utilize the land that they have. Chairperson, in some instances you find that people who come up will come up with the facts that simply because there's no security in the use of communal land, so it's very difficult or it's impossible to go and assist those people out there. So what is the FFC's view with that regard? Secondly, Chairperson, mention has been made during the presentation of the challenge with regards to emerging farmers who could not sort of produce food in their farms. My view, Chairperson, is that firstly, these farms that have now been occupied by these emerging farmers, if I may call them, maybe excuse me for the word if it's not acceptable in the ears of some of us. These people have been allocated land or restored to these farms. It's not that they are just new portions of land that needs to be assisted in sort of any means, financially, mechanization-wise, to sort of start producing. These people have been allocated land, and instead of tilling or working the land in order to produce, they are not. Besides the drought that has now been sort of said to be the most factor that leads to low production in our country, what is FFC's view with regards to maybe engaging the department in making sure that those farms are productive. You go to areas where sugarcane is mostly the grown produce. The land that was restored to certain co-ops or CPAs or trusts is unproductive, resulting in those previously employed people who were earning an income just to put food on the table for their families are now no more working, and the land is now lying fallow. No production is coming up there. What is the view, what is the approach of the FFC with that regard? Lastly, Chairperson, during yesterday's presentation by Dr. Ngomane, Honourable Member Gapa raised the question with regards to the challenge of the food consumption or food accessibility for the urban dwellers, which have an easy access to food, and more over and above that, the food is a bit cheaper for the urban dwellers as compared to the rural dwellers. How could then the FFC come up with any sort of thought with regards to these challenges? Because obviously, the food is grown in the farmland. It's, the farm workers or the rural people are the main producers. They supply the markets. All of a sudden, when they buy food back in order to feed themselves, only to find that the food is more expensive as compared to those in the urban areas or urban cities and towns. I thank you, Chair.
Much FFC. Oh, you are on this.
Okay, then you are the last one on this round. If there's a second round, we'll take the second round. And I hope the second round will not be as long as the first round. Because, you know, normally the first round is long, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Thank you, Chair. I prefer to be on this round. Firstly, Chair, Honorable Fultani nearly preempted me by indicating that this is a depressing report. While I was having my opinion, which I still maintain, that it is an exciting report. Exciting to me in the sense that it really empowers us to be able to interact with the department. That part to me becomes very, very useful. And to an extent that the questions that I have are mainly in relation to the recommendations. But let me start with one of the one of lack of infrastructure in those rural areas. I would just like if there has been any possibility of interacting or in the interaction with the departments who are relevant in the provision of infrastructure, whether there was any possibility of them being engaged in this respect to provide infrastructure in those rural areas, or is there any opinion from them? And secondly, there is this issue which has been mentioned of the verification of the performance or in the provinces. Even in this one, I would have liked to find a recommendation or a concrete recommendation, because it is true that if departments are only end up only saying the money has been transferred, it is not assisting. And also, adding on that, is this one of the entities where there has not been a mechanism, whether there can be a recommended mechanism to ensure that the entities do spend these funds in the way they are expected to. For instance, I think it would be interesting to ensure that the entities do not actually outsource when they are given funds, because they have expertise and resources within themselves, and you find that they further outsource and look for other expertise outside themselves. I think these are the main ones. And then, or the other one, the last one, is beyond the coordination between these two departments, these two sister departments, rural development and land reform, and this one of ours. I'm impressed by this element of coordination, but I'm only afraid that maybe this coordination is expected to be spontaneous, and then in that case, I suspect it won't work. If these siblings are expected to just coordinate themselves, maybe there should be a formal way of ensuring that there is this coordination, which will make them to understand that I have to sit this, I have to take this, so that my issues come.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chapa, FFC. You must not be afraid. If an issue it does not belong to you, it belongs to a department to answer. You must just indicate so. Don't attempt to answer on their behalf. We are with them next week, Tuesday, so they will have to answer. But you must also just flag those issues. You must just indicate to members. If you can't answer it, you must say, no, this one belongs to the department, in order for us to note it for next week, Tuesday.
Thank you very much, and to honorable members for the questions and insights. Now, coming to the first one on debt write-offs and whether there are any plans, this is a matter of concern for us, but it's a question that the department should address. We're here flagging it for the benefit of the portfolio committee to raise with the department as a pressing issue. They will have responses on what they are doing around debt write-offs, because it's an internal departmental matter. Then, Honorable Paulson, a lot of your comments I agree with around the innovations that can be done around food security, nutrition security, etc. I just want to pick up on your issue around making illegal farm evictions. The way we've approached it in the recommendation is obviously you are the lawmakers, we're not the lawmakers. And as it currently exists, the two cases that we have with settlement is where the courts have put the onus on municipalities to cater for those that have been evicted on from the farms. So courts have put it on municipalities to make a plan. And making a plan means they have to find resources that they had not budgeted for to address evictees coming to settle in municipalities, almost like an unfunded mandate on municipalities coming from a court decision. So our recommendation was much more focused on the short-term budgetary pressures being imposed on municipalities as a result of how the courts have pronounced on handling those that have been evicted. But sure, from a lawmaking side, I'm sure members know how to deal with the issue of making eviction illegal in the first place. Those are issues that you're more qualified to deal with, as it's in your purview. Then your questions, Chair. Which are both instructive and technical. We agree with you on the disjuncture between 100% spending and 78% delivery. That disjuncture needs looking into, and in fact, that is one of the main problems that we think the portfolio committee should focus on. Because this is not even speaking to new resources coming in. It's saying on the basis of what the department has, it's spending everything but not meeting on what it has promised that it is going to deliver, missing by 22% on what it has promised. So that's an issue to deal with in next week. Your second question was around the serious under funding issues around the department. And this is actually a big issue, and runs not only for DAF, but many other departments are beginning to raise this issue. What we feel is lacking is that during the MTech processes, departments don't come as prepared as they should be and with sufficient evidence of a costing nature on exactly what it costs to implement the National Development Plan objectives for the year that they are discussing. So it's at that early phase during the MTech processes where departments need to have evidence and costing figures that they then use for the negotiation process during the allocations. Sure, we will understand that all programs need to be funded, maybe not adequately funded, but so that they are a going concern. But in a lot of in a number of instances, you tend to find that the evidence to support the point that you have made may be lacking from the department motivating for increases. So their case gets killed off by a lack of evidence to support that they are genuinely underfunded to meet the National Development Plan objectives. The question on the FFC Act, particularly around assignment of a function to a province or municipality by national. And your interpretation is perfect. That's exactly what the FFC Act says. And the FFC Act is there to protect sub-national government from national government imposing unfunded mandates through assignment to those areas. So what would happen in this particular case is if you give food security to, say, a municipality, just for argument's sake, and we're talking about small monies, what would be the implication? Well, in terms of our recommendation, once there is an assignment, there should be a corresponding pocket of money to support that assignment. Otherwise, the Financial and Fiscal Commission will not give a thumbs up for such an assignment. But if it remains undefined and a municipality goes ahead to carry out that function, then that function is essentially an unfunded mandate. And so what we are calling on is to make it explicit on what municipalities should do around food security. Because once it's made explicit, then we can trace the money that has been allocated for that function. At the moment, it's a vacuum and open to interpretation. And as the Honorable Sultani indicated, interpretation could at times even be wrong, but there's no mechanism to challenge some official that may come with the wrong interpretation around the assignment of that function. So as we currently stand from the implementing legislation, there's nothing that talks directly to the function for municipalities around food security. And what you then tend to find is they don't do as much as they could, or only those that have bigger surpluses will be addressing that. But out of the kindness of their hearts or out of foresight of the relevant municipalities, there's just no concrete assignment of the food security function. So to bring order to that, there needs to be clarity on the role for municipalities and food security. And this is our recommendation that is being processed. We made it 2 years ago. It's in the pipeline and maybe a recommendation that the portfolio committee can pick up from and say, we already have this recommendation in the stream influencing the division of revenue. What is the response and who is going to clarify the role for municipalities? And once that role is clarified, then it's very easy for you, because there will be money that follows that clarification, and then we can assess whether that money is attending to the functional assignment that would have come on the scene. Then Madam Chair spoke about the formula issues, where rich provinces tend to get more than poorer provinces, and that's an issue that we discussed last year. The reason for that is not much to do with zero budgeting versus different approaches to budgeting, but it's to do with that 97% of allocations follow people. So what you tend to find is that, relatively speaking, the share of people are migrating to relatively rich provinces. And because the formulas are driven by your respective share of the overall population, provincial share in the total population, that explains the shifts in allocations going to Gauteng, Western Cape, and largely moving out of Eastern Cape, now KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, etc., and centralizing in those well-to-do provinces. So it's essentially because it's driven by share of the province in the total population, which has seen significant shifts. So the next question is, how can that be resolved? Because notice, as I have said, I haven't said overall populations in those losing provinces are declining. In fact, there is no province where overall population has declined. So they've had some increase, which means the people are still there. But in terms of growth or relative share in the provinces, that's the reason for them losing out to provinces that are attracting fastest the number of people. So the question is, how do you keep the provinces which are losing in terms of shares a going concern? What we did following the discussion with this portfolio committee last year was to raise the issue at Budget Council. The provincial equitable share is currently being reformed and reviewed. And at this stage of the review, the focus is on two areas: the quality of the data that goes into the formula, and then definition of a component that we've called rurality. How do we exactly define rurality as a component to be funded in that provincial equitable share? So when the time comes in February the following year, there will be a report on how the provincial equitable share has been adjusted for those first two components of it. So the answer is yes, there are shortcomings with the formula, and yes, it's being reviewed to reflect rurality and data quality in the first phase. And then the second phase, we can also deal with the other issues. Honorable Yev Sultani, a lot of good questions there. We're not trying to depress the portfolio committee, But I understand the context that he was phrasing it. In fact, we are a tool for this portfolio committee. And indeed, the letter that you wrote to us reflects that understanding. We report essentially to Parliament, and Parliament gives us any task that it wants for us to do. So when we come here, it's to assist you with your processes, in this particular case, of exercising oversight on the department. So it would be depressing, but our hope is that what we raise empowers you in one way or the other to exercise more effective oversight on the department. Then the issues around Section 153 of the Constitution, etc. Our belief in the Commission resonates with your understanding. We think there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents local government playing an active role in food security. The problem is enabling legislation for giving effect to that. And this comes back to our recommendation, which is in the pipeline, that we need legislation, regulations, now to take the issue forward. And as I said, we've put the recommendation into the pipeline, and the portfolio committee can lead that process to ensure that it is fast-tracked or and implemented. And we've already pronounced as a commission that that role for municipalities should be formalized around food security. Then on employment decline in agriculture, yes, we share a common understanding that this is not just a 2016 issue, but an issue that has been going on for quite some time, and even not necessarily unique to South Africa. And a lot of the other reasons have to do with issues around mechanization, some legislation that leads to job attrition within agriculture sectors, something such as changing skill content within the sector, and so on. So the drought, for us, the way we raised it was that when assessing the 2015-16 year, one new thing that has come on the scene is the drought. And this may have contributed to the first two quarters of 2016 declining compared to the previous year. So that was the only major thing that has changed in the trajectory of what determines employment in agriculture. But we do maintain that for the size of agriculture in the economy and benchmarking that size against other comparable countries, South Africa doesn't contribute as much employment as other countries with exactly the same size of agriculture in the economy. And if you believe in benchmarking exercises, the next question would be to understand why it is that for the same size of agriculture, we don't contribute as much employment. And that would be a research question that can be given either to the department or to ourselves, depending on how the portfolio committee wants that done. It's usually better if the research is done by the department itself and you ask us to evaluate the research on your behalf so that you can exercise oversight on what they are proposing following the research. But it's really up to the portfolio committee how it handles that. The FFC Act and our mandate allows you to make a request on ourselves for work to be done, and we can negotiate on how soon we can be able to come back with some credible work for the portfolio committee. Then the issues around fiscal management, we fully agree, Honorable Fultani, and those should be posed with department, and we can understand whether what they're doing and how soon it will go away. Then you raised quite a critical self-introspection question. What is our success rate? How effective are we, and whether the portfolio committee is talking to the right institution? It's very difficult to measure one's own success rate, but what we've done is, over a 20-year period, we've looked into the recommendations that we've made, and on the basis of government response to our recommendations, as outlined in Annex E of the budget, have tracked how many have been accepted and are in process of being implemented. And on our last evaluation, which was for the 2014-15 year, we're sitting on 97% success rate, if you define that as success, where they accept the recommendation and give steps in terms of what they're implementing. So that sounds like a reasonable success rate. But the essence of the question is, it's very easy to accept a recommendation, but even more difficult to say, can you give plans on how you're implementing that recommendation? Unfortunately, given our mandate, we don't really do monitoring and evaluation of our recommendations, because we make the recommendations to Parliament. And Parliament is the one that exercises oversight on the departments for which the recommendations are meant to influence their activities, is the one that is best placed to actually follow up and say, in terms of our oversight, we've been given this recommendation by FFC that you've accepted. Where are you with that particular recommendation? And out of that, that will hopefully enhance the oversight aspects for Parliament and be in keeping with our mandate. Issues of non-validity of provinces and what can be done in terms of consequence management, again, unfortunately, we are not the best placed institution to talk around consequence management. What we do is put recommendations on the table for the portfolio committee to then use as it deems fit when it exercises oversight. Then there were last two sets of questions around emerging farmers' utilization of communal land. Coordination between DAF and rural development, and mechanisms to ensure that entities don't outsource. I will ask my colleague Halib to give some insights into those aspects. Halib.
Okay, just to respond to some of those questions that members have raised. Right, so the first, one question that was raised was on the, how can one assist in terms of looking at the communal land and improving or having a policy on mechanization, as well as a view on communal tenure. With respect to this particular question, the commission did some investigation into the whole issue of land reform as part of our 2018-2019 Division of Revenue submission. And we came up with a few recommendations to assist the depart or the sector rather to improve the performance of land reform farms, that especially in terms of productivity as well as job creation. Now, one of the things that we also did was to actually assess the actual impact of the land reform program, and our assessment basically found that across the board, and here we basically sampled land reform farms in three different provinces, rural provinces. And our assessment was that essentially across the board, all of these three rural provinces, both job creation, agricultural productivity declined. And in some of the sites, food security declined as well. And the main reason for that was many of these land reform farms went out of operation. So some of the recommendations that we made with respect to that piece of work was essentially for both the Department of Rural Development as well as the Department of Agriculture to actually improve coordination around the land reform program. Because essentially what is happening is that both departments are actually operating in silos, yet they both focus on essentially very similar overlapping functions. The one department, for example, will do a few certain activities, another department will do another activities, but there's no coordination. The other issue that we also flagged as part of that recommendation was that at the moment, the way that the allocation is being done or the way that the support is taking place at a government level is actually centrally controlled. So what you essentially find is that the National Department of Land Reform is attempting to provide assistance to these land reform farmers, but it's taking place to a national department, and they are very far removed from the farmers, which is actually on the ground. And here we are essentially saying that given the extent of the problem, shouldn't there be a role for sub-national government to play a much more effective role, especially with respect to your municipalities, which is really where your land reform farms are actually located. One of the biggest, just with respect to emerging farmers, there are a few major challenges that we highlighted. One of them is post-settlement support. And this is probably one of the biggest reasons why emerging farmers are actually not successful as they were supposed to be, is that there's just a lack of proper or adequate post-settlement support. And in our recommendation that we made in the 2018-19 submission, we actually recommended that those two funding sources that are meant for post-settlement support should actually be consolidated so that we strengthen the implementation of this program. The funding will still not be sufficient because the amount of emerging farmers that require assistance is much larger than what the funding allocation is currently. But at least if you combine the two funding sources, you'll be able to achieve a much bigger impact on the ground. And then lastly, with respect to the coordination, between the two departments, I fully agree with the honourable member. If one just allows a spontaneous coordination between these two departments, it may not actually be as effective if there is some kind of formalised arrangement which should actually underpin the working together of these two critical departments in agriculture and rural development. I think those are the questions that I was meant to respond to. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, thank you very much. Thank you, FFC. I'm now taking the last round. Roma Panga and Honourable Fayoteng, those are the only two last questions. And then from there, I will be closing this meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a clarity-seeking question with regards to the allocation framework for agricultural grants. The presenter stated earlier on that the allocation depends on the size of the population. So, but here I found that the Northern Cape, it is given the very huge amount in terms of the ground, whereas it doesn't contribute a lot in the process. So I want to find out now, it is also said that the criteria here is focusing on the area size. You know, there is a contradiction now, to my understanding, because he said that it depends on the population size. Here it is written that it depends on the area size. I submit, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. It's just my question about the...
Filtani.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you must pronounce your surnames properly.
No problem, Chair. Thanks for that. I had a question about which went like this. What legislative steps can be taken to enforce corrective measures to make sure that there is a proper alignment between grants and policy, given your mandate? Thanks for your response on the success rate of acceptance of your recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and the two honourable members for the questions. Okay, on the first one, just to clarify, there are two instruments. Running as allocations into provinces. This is the equitable share and conditional grants. So for the equitable share, that's the one that I was saying follows people. So that equitable share is essentially 97% of it, according to our most recent estimates, is it follows people and allocations can be traced back to actual individuals. Now, the Northern Cape contradiction that you are referring to is about a conditional grant, not equitable share. And conditional grants are not based necessarily on following people, but on the discretion of the department. So the reason why we are raising it is because the grant is meant to fund agricultural activity. Yet, in terms of the conditions or the allocation criteria, which the department contributes to and affects, in fact, department tells National Treasury what to put in terms of allocation criteria for its own grants. Its own grant is area size rather than agricultural activity as a allocation criteria for that conditional grant. And this is where we're saying the portfolio committee needs to say, well, there's nobody who questions that we shouldn't fund area size, because when you're governing even areas. But it shouldn't be a grant that says I'm promoting agriculture that does the funding of area. A grant that is talking about production should fund agriculture production activities, and that should be reflected in the conditions of that grant, which the department can directly influence by changing the conditions for allocation of that particular grant, if that clarifies. Then, Honorable Sultani, the legislation that can address the issue that you are raising is the Division of Revenue Act, the DORA. This is the one that we can directly influence. And when the budget gets tabled in February, it opens a window for the Financial and Fiscal Commission to
give recommendations again to Parliament in terms of whether the Division of Revenue Bill should be passed into an act or not in its current status. So the next meeting will be, I think, February, 20-something February for next year when that gets tabled. And after a week, we will have prepared our submission on that deal, and the portfolio committee, when it is discussing that division of revenue bill, we usually deal with it with the appropriations and finance committees. We'll have recommendations on whether we're recommending to Parliament to accept or amend that bill before it becomes an act. That's the most direct one in terms of our recommendations.
Are you done? Okay, thank you very much. Now, members, we have received the presentations from the FFC, DPME, the AG, and who else? Now, the purpose of those presentations was to empower members with information to assist you when you interact with the department. You are then able to raise those critical issues. Now, all those bodies indicated to you as to what are the challenges in the department and those different entities, what are the shortcomings. They've also indicated what recommendations have they made to both the department and different entities. Now, when we interact with the department and those entities starting from Tuesday next week, we must then probe the department. They will have to explain to the portfolio committee as to whether were they able to implement some of the recommendations that were made. If not, why not? How are they addressing challenges that were identified, and so on and so forth. So it means next week we are going to have a very long day. So you must prepare yourself for next week. So I'm just advising you that after this meeting, just make sure that you go back to those reports, just to refresh your memory and so on in order to interact with the department. Because most of the questions that you raised in today's meeting and the previous meetings, those questions must be raised with the department, not with the entities and so on. I know that those who presented attempted to answer and so on, but the department and its entities must then provide detailed and comprehensive answers to the portfolio committee when we meet with them next week. Having said so, thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned till next week, Tuesday, same time, same venue.
Okay. Is it safe?
Yeah.
It is also small, but they will investigate possibilities of getting another venue and then they will communicate with you. Thank you.